Welcome to the Lunch Hour Sports Podcast, here with your hosts, Jacob Spedley,
Sam Bett,
Justin Rehammer,
and Nathan Romanoff.
Our topics today, the MLB free agency period. Is the stove is hot, players moving from place to place. In the NFL, the playoff picture is coming into fruition, and the 2022 World Cup has concluded. We will break it all down for you. Now, here's Sam Betts. Sam! Players moving left and right in the free agency market. The winter meetings have concluded. Where's everyone at now, Sam?
Jake, I mean, there's been many moves made in the past couple, in the past 2 months, actually. The winter meetings, like you said, have concluded. And kind of a contradictory statement, they have been very hot, to say the least. A lot of signings have been going on. We want to cover some of just the bigger ones that have been happening here. Let's start off with the Astros, just coming off a World Series win. Unfortunately, to our heartfelt Phillies here. They put up a good effort, but the Astros, they proved that they were the better team, unfortunately. But they became even better. They signed Jose Abreu to a 3-year, $58.5 million deal. Now, Jose Abreu, a former 2020 AL MVP during that shortened season, he's coming in to replace Yuli Gurriel, who has not been re-signed. Yuli Gurriel, 38 years old, only had about 8 home runs, around like 40 RBIs or so. Jose Abreu is definitely going to fill out that role pretty nicely for the Astros.
Yeah, I think Jose Abreu, a great addition, really fills in that Yuli Gurriel role. Of course, hasn't necessarily lived up to that 2020 MVP season he had a few years ago, but still has been really good for the White Sox, hitting in the middle of that order. And now you put him in there in a 5-6 spot in that order. That, again, just as you mentioned, coming off of a World Series, just a great addition by the Astros. And I don't know if you'll mention it or not, but also today the Astros bringing back Michael Brantley, who has struggled with injuries, to play left field, allows them to move Yordan Alvarez, who really struggled in the field, back to the DH. So the champs getting stronger again, Sam, and reloading that lineup.
And putting him next to Jose Altuve, a guy who wasn't really good in the championship series, but again has been a multiple-time All-Star, has won a World Series before. Put him next to the young Jeremy Peña, who was electric during that offseason and definitely looks to be the shortstop of the future for the Astros, along with Yordan Alvarez, who has been a very hot bat for that team. I mean, the Astros, again, they're looking to make another run into the playoffs. I foresee them going very deep, even maybe back to another World Series. Who knows, but that team is definitely hot now with Jose Abreu. The Mariners, another team who was very surprising, as we mentioned before, in that AL Central. They're going to be very good, and they've got even better. Teoscar Hernandez has joined the team from the Blue Jays in exchange for Eric Swanson and Adam Mako, a minor league pitcher there. Very low, kind of, not too many big stars that are going there to the Blue Jays, but I mean, Teoscar Hernandez has proved really well, a really good fielder for the Blue Jays, and it hit really well too. A very powerful bat, a guy who gets who has a pretty decent average. I mean, this is a perfect team for Teoscar. And then Colton Wong also go into the Mariners too, exchange for Jesse Winker and Abraham Toro to the Brewers. Jesse Winker didn't necessarily perform that well for the Mariners, as he suspected, had a really good turnout for the Reds when he was on that team, but unfortunately just didn't pan out for the Mariners. Abraham Toro, another guy who's just kind of been moving around, moved from the Astros to the Mariners. Definitely Colton Wong fills in that second base role better than Abraham Toro will. Definitely some upgrades there for that Mariners team.
Yeah, and you bring up a few teams in there. Start with the Mariners. Get a guy in Teoscar Hernandez, a guy that it just seemed like down the stretch, especially in the playoffs, going up the against the aforementioned Astros, they needed more power to really deepen that lineup. When you have a guy that can transcend the game like Julio Rodriguez, you add a guy like Teoscar Hernandez, who can give you a corner outfield defense, not necessarily known for his defense, but can bring the power, bring the contact, gets on base, and can really deepen an already good Mariners lineup. You mentioned they bring in Colton Wong as well, more of a very good up-the-middle defender. You see teams now, especially with the new rules, building up the middle. The Mariners now have Rodriguez in center, Wong at second. You've got J.P. Crawford manning the shortstop position
A
too.
Gold
That
Glover,
defense
J.P.
is going to
Crawford.
Yeah, that defense is going to be really good, and Wong has shown that he can swing the bat as well. A good slap hitter, hits to all fields, had a bit of a down year offensively for a Brewers team that really struggled, but I think he's going to be a good addition as well. And then on the Brewers side, they get a guy in Jesse Winker who struggled in Seattle, as you mentioned, Sam. Get him in a new environment in Milwaukee, back in the NL Central where he succeeded with the Reds. Abraham Toro, a utility guy. And then in a separate trade, getting a guy like William Contreras from the Braves in the Big Sean Murphy trade.
That was a very surprising trade to see for the Braves to make. William Contreras having an all-star appearance at that DH spot, unfortunately, because Bryce Harper was injured. But really, for them to trade a guy like William Contreras, you would have thought he would have been the future of that Braves catching pair with him and Travis d'Arnaud there. But they decided to go with Sean Murphy from the Athletics, made a couple trades for their for one of their number one pitchers. I think it was their number one prospect, Kyle Muller. Who they went to the Athletics and a couple other of their prospects being dealt as well. That was a really surprising trade to see. Not that Sean Murphy isn't a good catcher at all. I mean, he won a Gold Glove, fairly decent with a bat too. I think he had around 18 home runs, 80 RBIs or so. But I mean, that was very surprising to see. But I mean, the Brewers definitely got an upgrade at that catching spot, no doubt.
Yeah, and I think improving their offense, and also looking at the Blue Jays too involved with this. Of course, you lose a guy like Teoscar Hernandez in that lineup, but I think they signed Kevin Kiermaier. It's been a bit of an underwhelming and quiet off season, at least looking at the Blue Jays. And in my eyes, they get Chris Bassitt for the rotation. You get Kevin Kiermaier in center, possibly moving Springer over to one of the corner outfield spots. But I think again, you look at that trade with Hernandez on face value, and it's like, oh man, the Blue Jays, what are they doing? I mean, they need bullpen help, and while Eric Swanson maybe isn't someone that moves the needle, you look at his baseball reference page and look at some of the percentile numbers for him, and he was a really good reliever, and get a prospect in was it Adam Mako out of the bullpen. So I mean, again, I think it benefits both teams. I think that's what can be said there.
There are always some diamonds in the rough, Jake. You never really know, for the average fan at least, you never really know what's going on in some of these GM's heads. But I mean, if you look at the analytics, you look at the advanced stats, you see why some teams try to trade for some of these guys. It all comes down to the analytics. If we move on now, these are two teams that kind of taken two different approaches with some of their free agent signings. We saw the Rangers go after Jacob deGrom, 5 years, $185 million. Now, Jacob deGrom only pitched about 11 games, went 5-4 with a 3.08 ERA. But I mean, Jacob deGrom has been electric. I love watching him pitch. It's always kind of a joy, even though it was against the Phillies, and he would give the Phillies a really hard time. It was always really nice seeing him. I mean, Cy Young Award winner as well. I mean, what a great pitcher. But he has had some injury concerns. I mean, going to the Rangers are definitely trying to stack this team. They have gotten some other pitching. Andrew Heaney and Jake Odorizzi, they've added to their rotation as well. Obviously, Jacob deGrom has been the big guy. They're adding it to a couple other stars who are trying to make some names for themselves. Marcus Semien, who's been in MVP talks. Also, Corey Seager, another guy who's trying to make another name for himself after coming off of. He's been on the team for a while, but I mean, being on that Dodgers team, going to Texas is kind of a little bit of a different story there. But we look at the Mets and how they're planning their rotation, and they might have done it a little bit smarter than the Rangers here. Justin Verlander signing for 2 years, $86 million, the recently named AL Cy Young winner and a multiple time Cy Young winner. Justin Verlander has been amazing this past season. He was even no hitting the Phillies at one point until that was broken up. In the ninth inning by Garrett Stubbs. I just want to mention that. Love that backup catcher. But he's been on fire. And I mean, they also signed Kodai Senga, 5 years, $75 million. And he was also really great in Japan too. A lot of teams are now looking to the guys who were playing in like the Korean leagues and also in Japan as well. But I mean, Kodai Senga was very good, and to pick him up for that much as well. They also have Max Scherzer still, a guy who has seen a lot of success and is a star in the MLB now. So you have those three really good guys, along with also signing Jose Quintana for 2 years, $26 million. Not like a really high, like hard throwing guy, but a really good kind of like a finesse pitcher, as one would say. Has had some decent numbers, had some recent success, especially when he went to the Cardinals this past season. I mean, those four guys in their own have really bolstered their bullpen enough that it kind of was about the same. I believe it was about the same paying for all those guys as it was for the Rangers to pay for Jacob deGrom. Not that saying that Jacob deGrom, like I said, I love Jacob deGrom. I think he's a really good pitcher. I think the Mets are taking a very smart approach. They're spending money to get guys, but I mean, they're spending a lot of good money to get really good guys instead of a lot of money to get one like amazing MVP caliber guy. I mean, to be honest, with Senga, with Scherzer and Verlander, you possibly have like three type of MVP caliber guys for the price of one.
I think, of course, that is definitely a point. And as you mentioned, Sam, two teams kind of going in different directions, even though the Rangers were still able to add Andrew Heaney to the mix, which I believe really solidifies their rotation
Gives them a
quite a
really
bit.
nice left-handed pitcher, too.
Yeah, when talking about DeGrom, you have Perez, Gray, Heaney. You mentioned they brought in Odorizzi. And then you look at the Mets. There is some risk involved. I think phenomenal moves. And again, just listening to, certain insiders and stuff of the game, of the impact that Steve Cohen, the owner of the Mets, not only with their rotation, but bringing back Brandon Nimmo and his willingness to spend, is impacting not only, of course, the Mets team and getting them better, but influencing other owners like AJ Preller and the Padres. And again, mentioning, a lot of these big shortstops, where they're going. Of course, we'll mention that here
Oh, we'll get
in a
there.
moment. But yes, but just influencing owners being a willing to spend more money. You mentioned Verlander, of course. Just a 2 year contract for him, adding to Scherzer, who already had a 2-3 year deal that he signed last year. You get another wonderful veteran that brings postseason experience, aging like fine wine on the mound. It's going to be an extremely tough NL East division, looking at it as a whole. You bring in a guy like Kodai Senga, who you don't know how he's going to translate, but you're talking about a guy who, at his best, has a 99 mile per hour fastball, 84 mile per hour slider, and a ghost pitch, if you will, forkball is what they're calling it, can be a kind of 1C, if you will. I mean, that's just a scary rotation for any team. And like you said, they were able to, after DeGrom chose Texas, they were able to rebuild that rotation, also signed David Robertson. Oh, yeah, they brought back Brandon Nimmo, who was, elite in center field. It's just, plentiful for the Mets.
Oh, definitely. I mean, not too scary because, I mean, hey, the Phillies went to the World Series, but hey, we'll keep an eye on them. One big thing before we get to the big shortstops, the Yankees re-signing Aaron Judge, 9 years, $360 million. Aaron Judge, as we saw this season, broke the AL single season home run record, breaking Roger Maris's record. The Yankees did not want to let go of Aaron Judge. It was very iffy of when he if he would come back. He wasn't necessarily giving a lot of information either. There were talks about him going to the Red Sox, or talks about him going to the Dodgers. In fact, it was falsely reported that he was in talks with the Dodgers, and then that writer eventually retracted that statement. But I mean, for the Yankees, they knew what they had to do, and they got it done. They kept their right fielder, and Aaron Judge is definitely going to be a Yankee for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, the legend of Arson Judge going to the Giants, of course, reputable reporter John Heyman making that mistake. But as you kind of alluded to, Sam, they had to do this. And of course, you see them get Rodon as well, which is another big addition. If they lost Judge, it would be a huge loss.
All right, guys, last thing I want to talk about is we have three big shortstops that have been dealt. Well, not necessarily dealt, they were free agents, but they chose to go to these teams. And It was very kind of contentious on which shortstop was going to go to which team. There were a lot of good ones on the market this season or this offseason. Let's start with the Phillies. Philadelphia Phillies signed Trey Turner to an 11-year, $300 million deal. Trey Turner, coming off a season with the Dodgers, is very good. I really like this signing, and I was very kind of surprised when it happened. Really good shortstop. Has played other infield positions like second base. Can also play center field as well. Really good base runner. Can steal a lot of bases. Has a very smooth slide. Really gets there, just kind of like the Michael Jackson slide, I like to call it. Just comes up and just kind of just very smooth. Really good with the bat too. Not a very big power bat, but I mean, can definitely hit for average. Has hit in the high 290s and 300s in past seasons before. But no, Jake, I really like this. Very good defensive shortstop too. This is going to move Bryson Stott over to second base, I believe. Bryson Stott was the Philly shortstop for that end of the 2022 season, but probably going to move over to second base. I feel like Stott will probably just adjust to that pretty well. But yeah, the middle infield looking really nice for the Phillies, Jake.
Yeah, I think this is a great acquisition by the Phillies. Of course, moving on from Jean Segura, second base, as you mentioned, moving Stott over to second. But like you mentioned, Trey Turner brings you the whole package. Of course, his defense has been, a bit average, maybe not is there for some of the other shortstops, but definitely brings the speed defensively, and has great range. But again, you signed this guy for the five-tool nature of the bat, the speed, his power numbers, even though maybe they aren't there to some other shortstops or some other positions. 21 homers is still 21 homers, and that might even go up at Citizens Bank Park as well in comparison to Dodger Stadium. But like you said, the biggest thing is on base. The Phillies team in 2022, a lot of swing and miss potential. And to add a guy that, as you mentioned, I mean, over his past few years, he's been hitting 280, 290, up around 300 consistently, getting on base with his speed. And you're talking about a guy that has the potential to steal 50, 60 bases with the larger bases and the fewer amount of times that pitchers can throw over to first base. I mean, he's going to be running rampant for the Phillies, batting at the top of that order. I mean, this is exactly the guy that they needed, and the guy, not to harp back on Phillies past, but reminds you of a Jimmy Rollins, Shane Victorino, a table setter that, especially for a team that is going to be without Bryce Harper for at least the first 4 or 5 months of the season, is going to need a guy that gets on base like Trey Turner.
Phillies also made other good signings as well, signing Taijuan Walker to a 4-year deal, and also Matt Strom adding some left-handed bullpen help as well. Phillies just keep making those moves. We love to see it. Now, Trey Turner, actually, it was reported that he kind of disregarded another deal from another team that we're going to talk about here for the Padres. The Padres originally offered him $324 million, I believe, but he went to the Phillies instead for a little bit of lesser money. But the Padres did get another really good shortstop in Xander Bogaerts. He signed for an 11-year, $280 million deal. Now, Xander Bogaerts, coming off of playing the Red Sox for his entire career, in fact, winning a World Series with them, Xander Bogaerts, he's another really good shortstop. I like him as well. Very good with the bat. The Red Sox letting another one of their star players go. Obviously, the Red Sox are making some other deals as well, but to let a guy like Xander Bogaerts go, I mean, they also had Trevor Story as well, I mean, if you would have moved one of them over, if one of them would have been willing to move over to like a third base or like a second base, if Trevor Story would have moved over to second base, if Xander Bogaerts would have moved over to third, where he played when he first started his career with the Red Sox, that would have been perfect, but obviously that didn't end up happening. The Red Sox do still keep Trevor Story, a really good shortstop, but Xander Bogaerts, I believe, kind of just goes into that elite shortstop spot.
Yeah, I agree with you, Sam. And of course, looking at it from both teams' perspectives, you look at the Padres, you have Manny Machado in there, Juan Soto just made it to the NLCS without Fernando Tatis, who was out due to suspension. What happens to him? probably moves him to the outfield. And what happens to Ha-Sung Kim, who filled in for Tatis and performed very well, especially defensively, and had a good year? The whole, you know, idea projections now is you'll have Machado at third, Bogarts at short. Whenever Tatis comes back, he'll be more of a outfield, like corner outfield guy as well. Kim at second and Cronenworth at first. It's a lot of moving pieces, but I think a team that can do it is this Padres team. They were in on Judge. They were in on Turner. They got Bogarts, and he's going to be a huge help with the bat. I mean, you're talking about a first four in this lineup when Tatis gets back of Tatis, Machado, Soto, and Bogarts. I don't think any pitcher in the National League or American League wants to go up against that, for that matter. So great addition by the Padres. And then, as you mentioned, you look at the Red Sox. You had Bogarts at short, Story at second last season. Not willing to fork over the money, makes it a bit hesitant, maybe on a Rafael Devers extension, which is the big question for them. But yeah, like you said, they've spent money in other areas, just agreed to a deal with Justin Turner today, to kind of swapping with J.D. Martinez. They're trying to kind of reinvent their style in this kind of retooling area. But again, very disappointing for them to let such a franchise hero like that go.
This isn't the first time we've seen the Red Sox do that, especially with Mookie Betts here. That was probably one of the other biggest ones I could think of. But like you said, maybe extend Rafael Devers. Again, trying to reinvent their team. The Red Sox have struggled the past couple seasons. Obviously, they came off a World Series not too long ago, but trying to reinvent their team, still stay in the championship talks there, but kind of just have to see how they do in the future. For the Padres, you're going to have to move Fernando Tatis over into the outfield, like you said. He's still suspended for the first 20 games of the season. So I guess you're just going to have to see how that will work without him, as you have already seen for the past season for that Padres team. Moving Cronenworth over to the first, he did play a lot of first base toward the end of the season there. Ha-Sung Kim, another guy who did perform really well in the championship series and also in the earlier playoffs as well. Still want to keep him in the lineup. Obviously, yeah, they're just going to have to rework that offense. Obviously, you still want a guy like Fernando Tatis in your lineup with that bat. I mean, he's very good with the bat. It's just about whether he can stay healthy or just stay in the game, I guess, in general. Last shortstop I want to talk about is Carlos Correa. Now, this just recently happened. Carlos Correa signed to the Giants for 13 years, $350 million. Carlos Correa was on the Houston Astros, then moved to the Twins. Didn't see a lot of success with the Twins. The Twins had a very hard time getting to the playoffs. That AL Central division is very hard. It gets very contested. The Guardians are honestly taking that spot too, and they performed really well. Josh Naylor was another guy who I'd like to mention just performed really well for that team. Jose Ramirez as well. But again, that division is very hard to kind of go against, because a lot of those teams are very similar kind of in strength.
Sam, are you talking about the AL Central as a hard division? I mean, okay. The Guardians had a good year. Jose Ramirez was great. Their pitching staff was great. Come on. It's the AFC South of Major League Baseball.
The reason it's hard is that a lot of those teams are similar in strength. Like, one is going to overpower the other. Like, let's take the Twins, the White Sox, and the Guardians. They're around the same record.
They're all mediocre. Okay?
Exactly.
Guardians are a better team.
But I'm just saying within that division, I'm not necessarily talking about expanding outside of that division. If we talk about those three teams always usually have the same record. They always are in the around like the same, like there's not really one that's going to really overtake the other. And then it kind of just has to go into like the final parts of the season of who's gonna take the division. Obviously, the Guardians kind of came out on top a little bit more, and they actually had a really good end of the season and were able to kind of take that division. Either way, we're getting a little sidetracked here. Carlos Correa stint with the Twins did not really go that well. Didn't really see any playoff success or any playoff appearances.
He was hurt for some of the season. Missed some games, Sam. I don't mean your preposterous takes can wait for a second. Just to touch on Correa, signed the 3-year deal with the Twins last offseason with opt-outs after each year. He proved himself. He took a prove-it deal with Minnesota. As you mentioned, okay, he was hurt. They were kind of prepping kind of a Royce Lewis Jr. at short, trying to get him
Until he
ready.
got until he got injured and then was out for the entire season too.
Yes, both of them struggled with injuries, and so did the Twins as a whole. But then you get this mega contract with the Giants, a rightfully deserved player. Carlos Correa is still one of the best shortstops in the game, and what he can do overall is defense is good. He had a down year. Guys have down years. I'm still big on Carlos Correa. Now the face of the franchise with the Giants, and you see all these contracts. Big, long deals where guys are cementing themselves with a team. Turner, 11 years. Bogaerts with 11 years. 13 years for Carlos Correa. Into their early 40s. You see the meme of the
I did
Family
see
Guy
that. I
meme
thought that
with
was really
Peter
funny.
Griffin swinging the bat, all of the shortstops in their age 41 season. But they want to play in one place. And of course, you look at the money value. But I think the years are big. Carlos Correa trying to reestablish, talking about the Red Sox reestablishing themselves. How about the Giants? They had such success 2012, 14, 16, going to the World Series. And they're trying to get into the mix here. You see the Dodgers losing some pieces. You got to keep up with the Padres and the Giants. In addition to Stripling, in addition to Manaea, get a big fish in Carlos Correa.
And a lot of guys like you were talking about all those big, like long-term deals. That's what guys are looking for. They don't want to have to worry about going through 5 different teams, meeting with their agents to sign contracts every like 2 to 3 years. A lot of guys want these long-term deals to stay with the team, make a lot of money, and maybe even win a championship. That's what the MLB, a lot of those guys are looking for. But Jake, that's all I have. Obviously, you didn't like my take there at the end. Whatever. I don't care.
We'll work on that. We'll work on that. We had a little bit of break, a little bit of a break there between episodes. It seems like Sam might have lost his thought. We'll work on that, Sam. We'll work on that. But Justin, someone I know with great takes over here, NFL playoff picture. What is going on, Justin? We are in week 14, 15. I can't believe it. We're creeping up on the postseason, and some teams are staking their claims in the AFC and the NFC.
Thank you, Jacob, and thanks for that compliment. I appreciate that.
Of
But
course.
before we get to the playoff talk, can I just talk about the past week that we've had in the NFL? What's going on, man? I want to talk about the game that happened just yesterday for us, Saturday, December 17th. The Minnesota Vikings are hosting the Indianapolis Colts. They're losing so bad. I mean, like, I'm watching this game, I'm like, come on, this is awful. Like,
Oh,
this is supposed to be one of the best teams in the NFC. Like, this is what the NFC has to offer? Really? They're losing 33 to nothing at home in the third quarter. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, their offense is just like, hey guys, let's score a touchdown. That's more fun than just not scoring. So they
and then
start
score
scoring
again
points. Yeah,
and
and they scored
again.
again and again. And the defense is like, hey, let's get some stops here, you know? And before you know it's overtime. And then they're lining it up, they're kicking the winning field goal for the greatest comeback of all time. It was insane. I never thought I would see a comeback greater than the 32-point deficit 1993 Bills. Like, that was insane.
Or the 28-3 Falcons Patriots in the Super Bowl. Again, Bills greatest comeback. You got the Pats and Falcons Super Bowl.
And it was Matt
That's
Ryan again. It
unbelievable.
was Matt Ryan
Yeah.
again.
Ryan again.
I'm seeing a common link between the two.
Yeah, that helped them secure a spot in the playoffs, clinching their division, the Minnesota Vikings, to still stay on topic there, but
And I just want to mention before we move on, Jeff Saturday should not be a head coach after the season. I'm sorry.
Definitely
I'm
not.
sorry, but
Definitely
yeah,
not.
no.
Agreed. Agreed.
Yeah, but one more game I just want to talk about real quick because I just caught the end of it. What happened to the Patriots here? I mean, this is a game. I'm sorry. It's just one play, really. That's all that needs to be discussed. The final play of the game. For Sam, who probably didn't see this, the score was 24-24. There's 4 seconds left on the clock.
Oh, wait. No, I did see that. Wait.
The Patriots call a run play.
Yeah.
He runs it up the middle for 20 yards. He's about to get tackled.
They were doing, like, backwards lateral.
Yeah. It was about to get tackled. End of the game. It's going to be end of the game. He laterals Ron Stevenson, laterals the ball for some reason. Then it gets over to what, Jacoby Myers,
yeah.
And for some reason throws it across his body all the way over the field. No, it gets intercepted by the defender, and they run it back to the end zone.
And not just any defender, the defensive lineman, Chandler Jones, who is at midfield, stiff arms Mac Daddy Jones and takes it to the house.
I did see that. Yes. That's actually, yeah,
I just want to say, Patriots, what are you doing? That's all I have to say about that.
What the hell were they thinking? Belichick, there's no way Belichick was like, yeah, go ahead, do that.
I was very happy about that because I picked the Raiders to win that game, and they did.
I picked the Patriots, Bills fan picking the Raiders to win that game.
All you have to do is go to overtime. And they did. I don't understand it. Understand their thinking process.
Okay. But yeah, let's talk about the implications on the playoffs now that this week has had. All right, let's first start with the AFC side of things, since we're already over there. Sitting at number one is the Buffalo Bills, at the top of the conference, 11-3. Right behind them, the Kansas City Chiefs, though, also 11-3. They're only separated by a head-to-head win the Bills have over the Chiefs. Then we have the Cincinnati Bengals in the 3 spot at 10-4. Then Tennessee at 7-7. You know, that division, like we said, Sam, pretty bad division. Not the worst in football, but definitely second to worst. And then in the wild card, rounding this one out, we got number 5, Baltimore, 9-5. Then the Chargers, 8-6, and Miami as well, 8-6. And then, of course, you have the hunt, but we'll get to the hunt a little later. I want to talk about the NFC now. Let's talk quick NFC side of things. We got the Philadelphia Eagles sitting at the top. They're at the top of the NFL with 13-1. They're only lost to the Commanders, so they're probably going to go the undefeated the rest of the season. Maybe they'll lose next week. We'll find out. We'll talk about it.
Please don't jinx them. Please don't.
We'll talk about it next a little bit later here. Then, of course, the Minnesota Vikings, as I mentioned, getting that crazy win, going to 11-3. Since then, we have San Fran 10-4. We have Tampa Bay, the worst division in football. Tampa Bay 6-8. They're one loss away from having a losing season, and they're going to be in the playoffs. Like, what is this? Come on.
Let's go Falcons.
Fifth seed, Dallas Cowboys. And you guys don't like to hear that. We'll talk about it. And then Washington football team and New York Giants are at 7-5-1. They're playing right now. We don't know the score of that game yet, but yeah, what do you guys think about the setup here so far?
It is a score update, of course. Again, this will probably come out beginning of next week, but the Giants are up 7-3 at the time being approaching the half. So, as you expect, a low-scoring NFC East game.
Yeah.
I'm tight about the Patriots because I picked them to win and they blew it. So I'll move past that though. In our little pick'em league, put that to a side. If you look at it, I've been really impressed with a lot of teams in the AFC this year. I think especially recently the Bengals have just been on a tear. I mean, talk about a team you do not want to play. It's the Bengals. Joe Burrow playing some great football. Obviously, he's got a great complement of weapons. T. Higgins, Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Mixon surrounding him. They're just having a great year. They can very well, you know, are a contender for that Super Bowl spot from the AFC. Obviously, the Bills and the Chiefs, you know, the two top dogs. It's been that way for the past, you know, 2-3 years now in the AFC, and both teams are looking dangerous. Bills got an impressive win last night in Buffalo against Miami, who, you know, has played them tough this year, and, you know, the weather coming in clutch at the end of the game there. It's pretty cool to watch Josh Allen playing great football, and it's going to come down to it. I'm interested to see that matchup between the Bills and the Bengals coming up here. That'll be a very important when all is said and done, especially as it comes to that one seed in the AFC. So that's a big game looming on the horizon there.
Yeah, I think looking at the AFC, of course, as you mentioned, Nate, a very impressive win for the Bills last night. A great back-and-forth game, potential playoff matchup. Of course, a lot of things can happen between now and then, but Dolphins and Bills head-to-head this season, quite some games. Chiefs, a bit of a scare today, going to overtime against the Texans. They're there's someone that, that again, even though we've seen that the Chiefs have the history, they have the track record now with its seven straight division titles in the AFC West, and have been, you know, for a division that, you know, even us, we were clamoring could be a division that could see, like the NFC East has been, where you see two, three, four playoff teams. They've been the cream of the crop, 11-3, but again, a team that I think could be, you know, prone to a possible upset. But as you mentioned, Nate, the Bengals have been, after such a slow start where everyone was like, Super Bowl hangover this, Super Bowl hangover that, Joe Burrow, is it everyone catching on? They have really come on, and not just the offense, but the defense has just gotten back to their, like, middle-of-the-pack, bend-but-don't-break mentality, you know, keeping them in games. But I'm going to go to the AFC South here. The Titans, 7-7. Do not sleep on Dougie P and the Jags, ladies and gentlemen. A big win over the Cowboys. Trevor Lawrence is slinging the ball around at everyone. I mean, their defense, is, you know, it was okay. They were okay. They're not necessarily world beaters by any means. But that division is up for grabs, and I wouldn't put it past them to being in there to the final week.
Yeah, talking about the hunt, they're sitting there at 6-8, and they're just one game out. I think that they could win that division, genuinely. The Jacksonville Jaguars are just playing really good football in some of these games. I mean, obviously they're also losing a lot to, you know, you don't get 6-8 because you're a great team, but they're putting it together right now. And they do play the Titans week 18. So they're at home. So there is a chance that they do take over that spot. And they honestly, they might deserve it because they've been playing very good football as of late.
Yeah, I've been very impressed with them as of recently. And I'm just going to call it. I did pick the Jaguars to win that game today. And I was very happy to see that. I'm sure, you know, Jake, as an Eagles fan, seeing that OT loss had to be savory for you as well. But very impressed with what Doug Peterson has done down there with Trevor Lawrence. Big turnaround from last year, you know, which was a mess with Urban Meyer at the helm. That's in the rearview mirror, and this is a young team that is looking to the future, and it's a bright future. It really does look like a bright future with, you know, the likes of Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne, you know, guys like Christian Kirk and Zay Jones. That's a good offense they got down there in Jacksonville, and I could definitely see them maybe squeaking into the playoffs here this year.
I'd also like to just mention some of these other teams. As Andrew Siciliano said on Red Zone, there's kind of a mosh pit here of mediocrity for the playoffs for the AFC side of things. In the hunt, you got 4-6-8 teams. Pittsburgh Steelers, you got Cleveland Browns, Las Vegas Raiders, and of course we mentioned the Jacksonville Jaguars. I'd say only probably the Jacksonville Jaguars have a good shot of making the playoffs. The rest of them, it's not a great chance, but they're in there, so I want to just say, like, what do you guys think? Who do you think out of that list could potentially make it out and possibly squeak into the wild card here?
You're saying outside of the Jaguars? Because we just
Let's not mention the Jaguars here. So okay. I'm talking Raiders, Browns, and Steelers here. Who do you think could beat out the Dolphins or the Chargers? Of course, the Patriots and the Jets in there, too.
Personally, I'll just speak on this real quick, Jake. I would lean probably a team like the Raiders just because of the star power. I mean, Josh Jacobs and Devontae Adams, those guys are difference makers, especially on an offensive side of the ball. And you saw, you know, it takes a bit of luck, and you saw with what happened today, last play of the game, they were able to walk it off against the Patriots there. So it takes a little bit of luck. I know they're in a tough division, but I like the star power they have and the experience they have. Obviously, they were in the playoffs last year. So if I had to choose out of those three teams, I would go with the Raiders. I don't see it happening, though. I think that the Chargers will pull it out and get a wild card, but that would be my pick if I had to go with one of those three teams.
I'm going to go with one of the teams from the second-best division in football, the AFC East. You say the Dolphins in there clinging on to that final spot after their loss to the Bills. Got the Patriots. Of course, we just talked about their brutal loss at the hands of the Raiders. And then the team that I'm going with, J-E-T Jets. The Jets, they come off of the loss to the Lions. Of course, not a good loss. The Lions have been red hot, though. I don't know. I just believe that Jets defense is good enough to possibly, again, if luck goes their way, of course, we're hypothesizing here, if, you know, the Dolphins struggle and continue to struggle through the next few weeks, the Jets, hey, if Mike White comes back, the legend of Mike White, and their offense can, you know, score enough to win them games, we could be talking about a party in New York where maybe both teams make it, and the Jets maybe could sneak in the AFC.
Yeah, that's a good call. I mean, the Jets have been looking all right. However, they're on a bit of a slide right now. Their offense still needs to figure some stuff out. So I'm personally not going to slide them in there just yet. I think the Patriots as well, kind of on a bad stretch here. They're not playing great, so I'm not going to put them in there. And Miami's sliding too. So you know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say, because of the football they're playing right now, I think the Las Vegas Raiders could take that final spot. I think that's, you know, Baltimore and Chargers, they're playing great right now. They're going to do well. You know, Lamar Jackson is going to come back and they're going to be just fine. So I think that for that final spot there, I think that the Las Vegas Raiders could really slide in and surprise people. Yeah, then I want to talk, of course, about the other side of things. I want to talk about the NFC side because we have two sides to the football coin here. Let's get to the other side here. Now, obviously, Philadelphia Eagles, number one seed, they're going to be the number one seed. They will win their division. These are all things that are going to happen. So
Jason, calm down. You need to calm down with
this.
This
is a 100% fact. It will happen.
They need one more win,
it will
Justin.
Definitely
100%
fully happen. As you can see, fans, I'm trying very
hard. He's trying to make up for his divisional predictions we did before the season, because I think him and Nate mentioned a different team for that division. But I'm just saying. We can continue.
Well,
I'm actually surprised by the Eagles, I must say, Jake.
I must say, at the beginning of the season, I thought, oh man, no way we're going to be right. But as we're coming towards the end here, like, you know, most of these predictions that we made are correct, like, at least on some, you know, ground. So I guess we'll find out, of course, when we get to, you know, we can do a review episode if we'd like. But let's get to the rest of the NFC here. I think the Minnesota Vikings, they're sitting at number two right now. I think, personally, I don't see them at number two at the end of the season. I see the San Francisco 49ers at number two at the end of the season. That's a team that is playing great football right now, even without their starting two quarterbacks now. They're still playing great football because they're a great football team.
Brock the Rock Purdy, man. You know, what else do you have to say?
Mr. Irrelevant.
Mr. Irrelevant, yeah. He has come in for Jimmy Garoppolo and played great, to be quite frank. I mean, I was shocked when Jimmy Garoppolo got injured. I was like, damn, because, you know, after they traded for McCaffrey, I was like, this 49ers team has a real shot of going to a Super Bowl out of the NFC. But Brock has come in and proved me he's played great for them. And if he can continue playing like this, you know, they have a roster that is built to go and contend for a Super Bowl, to play for a Super Bowl, to win a Super Bowl. So, you know, why not continue this hot streak into the playoffs? You know, we'll see. You know, they'd have to contend, obviously, with the likes of the Eagles, the Vikings. Obviously, you have Dallas there. Can't forget about, you know, the old man down south, Tom Brady. Doesn't look good right now. But at this rate, I do believe that they will be in the playoffs as division winners. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. But Brock Purdy, what else can you say? He's playing great football.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there, Nate. And it just goes to show the system that's built in place with Kyle Shanahan and company in San Francisco, where, you know, in a game that's so, you know, dominated by the quarterback, it, you know, they're able to plug guys in there and fit in. Again, you bring in a guy like McCaffrey who's fitting into another Debo Samuel type of role where he can, you know, get you 10-plus carries on the ground for close to 100 yards and also be such a threat out of the backfield. And then, again, even with Debo, with Kittle, you know, his explosiveness as a check-down guy and also a deep threat, and that defense, year in and year out, being really a top three, and many you could make the case a best unit in football. So great. I think this is the team in the NFC best complementary football. Of course, you have the team in the Eagles, you know, best record, but I think the 49ers are playing the best complementary football with, again, a third string quarterback in there, so definitely a big threat in the NFC.
I think honestly, if I'm the Philadelphia Eagles, I'm not scared of the Vikings. You can beat the Vikings. I'm not scared of Dallas. You can beat Dallas. I'm scared of San Francisco. They're a tough team. Now, just briefly touching on Tampa Bay, though. They're, 6-8 right now, looking real bad. Their division, not much better. 5-9 for everybody else in the division. It's anybody's division. That's all I'll say about it, Anybody we could see at the final, but whoever it is, I am very confident that the Dallas Cowboys, who will most likely be playing them, will have basically a first round bye and beat them. I don't believe it's going to be much of a challenge because this division's just not looking good this year. They're mediocre at best, and at worst, they're bad.
That's true. Not very good. I do think, though, I think Brady and the boys will take care of it. They'll get in that slot. I don't have any faith, really, in Atlanta, New Orleans, or the
Well,
Panthers.
I don't have faith in any of them at this point, so.
No, but Brady's been there, done it. I think, he's not playing great, but they've got a better roster than I think anybody else in the division. I think that they'll eke it out. And remember, people tend to forget, they started the season with a win against Dallas, so that could be a rematch, and you never know. Once you get to the playoffs, anything can happen. And, I don't think you can call that a first round bye for the Dallas, Justin, especially with the way they've been playing recently against the Texans and the Jaguars. So I don't know. I think you can, I think, anything can happen. I think they'll be able to get in and be all right. But I don't expect them to do anything, too special. I'm just saying, don't rule anybody out.
Best of the worst, if you will. Again, looking at, again, Justin kind of alluded to it earlier, the worst division in football, looking at record-wise, taking the crown from the AFC South, it seems like, the way the teams have played this year. But again, like Nate was saying, I don't know if you can, completely, rule out a tough matchup in the first round, especially when they'll be hosting a playoff game, especially if Dallas ends up as a wild card team. But it's been a tough season for all those teams, and I think the Bucks will take it. But man, is it gonna be an interesting last few weeks if one of these other teams, the Falcons, Saints playing close ball today, the Saints coming out on top. Got the Panthers 5-9, Sam Darnold at the helm now. I don't know if you could count out those three teams yet, just a game back. Get some drama in this, very poor division this year.
Coming around to the wild card here, of course, Dallas is almost in for good. If Washington loses tonight, they are in. So with that said, it's, looking like the Commanders, the Giants, they're in there. But you also got the Seattle Seahawks, which I didn't see at the beginning of the season, but apparently they're there. And Detroit. Detroit looking great. They're a scary team. I don't know. I think any of these spots up for grabs, of course, Washington and the Giants, they got that tie, so they're like a half game up on everybody. But I don't know. What do you guys think you see happening here for the final stretch?
Yeah, it's coming down to the wire, in the NFC for the wild card race. I think we're gonna learn a lot after tonight with the conclusion of the Giants Commanders game. That's gonna be vital, in that wild card race. But man, like you said, Justin, the Lions. Talk about a team you don't want to play right now. It's the Lions, man. I mean, they're playing great football. Dan Campbell, what he's done with that team is just incredible. I think he's a great coach. I think that, they have a lot of potential. I think that they just might end up finding themselves with that last wild card spot. I really think that out of all those teams you mentioned, I think that they can get in, especially with the way they're playing right now.
Yeah, I agree. Look at the Seahawks, a bit of a slow stretch here after a hot start, have kind of stumbled as the season has gone along, but like Nate mentioned, if they make the playoffs, Dan Campbell has to be coach of the year, and I see it maybe happening, especially with these divisional games in the NFC East that could take place, where one of those teams could lose a few games, fall out, and the Lions are in a primed opportunity to take that spot. Well, yeah, we'll certainly monitor those matchups, the final 3-4 weeks of the season as the playoffs approach, a lot of intriguing storylines in that regard. Switching from football to football, the Qatar 2022 World Cup wrapping up in Qatar, Argentina taking down France. Of course, the game finished 3-3, but a penalty shootout. Argentina winning that 4-2 in penalties, giving Lionel Messi his first World Cup victory. I mean, I'll just say it. Of course, this is coming from a guy that is still getting into soccer and getting into all the teams and stuff like that, but man, that was an amazing game. Woke up, I was on the edge of my seat, on my couch out there in front of the TV. It was going crazy, back and forth. What a almost cup of coffee-like game. So much energy going back and forth, Nate. What a game.
Insane. I will go out and say that this was the greatest World Cup final of all time. Definitely the greatest I've ever seen. Edge-of-the-seat stuff the whole way through. I mean, you watch the first half, Argentina gets a penalty, Messi scores it, you know, only about a few minutes later, 5-8 minutes later, they score a second, and they're up and they're cruising, you know, and you think, oh, wow, this is really Messi's year, you know, they're going to get it done, they're going to, you know, see this game out in the second half, but nothing's ever a sure thing, and, you know, the old saying is, 2-0 is the most dangerous lead in soccer, and my coaches always would tell me that, and it's true. 2-0 lead slipped away just like that, matter of seconds in the second half. A bad penalty given up by Argentina. Kylian Mbappe steps up, slots it home. I mean, he was fantastic today. Had a hat trick. Not even 2 minutes later, he scored the second to tie it. Send it to extra time. Insane. Edge of the seat stuff. He was able to slot a total of 3 penalties away. Think about that. That's very impressive for a player against the same goalkeeper. Managed to score all 3 of his penalties. Course the second in extra time, and then the third being in the penalty shootout. But I'm gonna give my props to him, but the man of the moment, Lionel Messi, finally gets his World Cup. 2 goals, just incredible stuff from him, and I couldn't be happier. This is coming from a guy who, you know, I'm a Ronaldo guy, I'll go out and say it, I've grown up, Ronaldo's been my man, but I feel like after today I'm perfectly comfortable saying Messi is the GOAT, and he played incredible. He got his World Cup and he truly deserved it.
Yeah, again, just a phenomenal game, and as you mentioned, Nate, Messi definitely deserving it. I mean, really the last quest on his, you know, long list of achievements after falling short in the previous World Cups, falling in the round of 16 in the previous years and getting knocked out in the group stage, and now being able to draw on this. So again, magic last carpet ride all the way through, and being the catalyst in the final game too, with the first goal and then the third one to retake the lead in extra time. Just phenomenal from him. And again, you're talking about the GOAT conversation. Of course, you know, he have differing opinions with everyone, but he has definitely cemented his case. And, you know, I might even look at it in a different way, almost a passing the torch, if you will. I think in this game, of course, you have so many great players around the world. Looking at the tournament as a whole, you got Neymar, what he was doing with Brazil in their run, of course Mbappe with France, Ronaldo playing a role in Spain, even though he was out of the one game that they played. They ended up falling to Morocco, again lost to France on the way to the final.
In the semifinal. Quick shout out, first African nation to ever make a semifinal in the World Cup. So
I did see that. That was crazy too.
Incredible, yeah. Just an incredible story from them. And, you know, just goes to show anything can happen in a World Cup, man.
Nate, what do you think about the USA team? Do you think that there's any chance that they can improve? It was a very kind of rough going for them. They tied twice, didn't they? They tied twice. They beat Iran and then lost to England.
No, the Netherlands.
The Netherlands. They lost to the Netherlands. Oh, yeah, because Van Dijk was playing. Yeah, that's right. They lost to the Netherlands, my bad. But they tied England, correct?
They did.
Do you think there's any do you see any improvements of them making it further into the World Cup in next couple of years? Do you think that, is there anything that they can do to improve? Or are they just kind of going to be like a bottom tier in the World Cup for the next couple of years?
Well, I'll start off by prefacing this. We didn't make the World Cup last go around in 2018.
That's so right.
This year, this World Cup, this time around, getting there was an important step. It was one that we expected to happen, and it did. We got there. We weren't in an easy group by any means. I mean, we had to play England, Wales, and Iran. Statistically speaking, and according to FIFA's rankings, the toughest group, actually, at the World Cup. So it wasn't easy by any means. Against Wales, we drew 1-1. Tough result. Probably should have won that game, but a late penalty gave Wales the goal they needed to secure a draw. We have England. England is one of the best teams in the world, guys. There's no way around it. They're young. They're talented. They very well, I think, would have been playing today had they beaten France in their quarterfinal matchup, which was close, the 2-1 win for France. But our U.S. team played very well against England. We very well could have beat them earlier on in this tournament. Of course, we came in with a 0-0 draw, and that's something that you can build on. That's something that you can look back at and say, you know, there's potential in this team. And to your question, Sam, yeah, I think we can build on what we have. This team, this U.S. team, was the third youngest team at the World Cup. They have incredibly young, talented players on the roster. You got Christian Pulisic, you know, the man himself who's playing at Chelsea. You've got the likes of Weston McKennie at Juventus. You've got Tyler Adams and Brendan Aaronson, both at Leeds United in the Premier League in England. Gio Reyna, who didn't see much action this tournament, but is still a young talent who's playing in Germany for BVB. You know, these guys are playing at top-tier clubs in Europe, and that's nice to see, especially for guys who are young and still developing. They're not even in their primes yet. So, you know, I think come this time, you know, 4 years from now, in 2026, when we're hosting, yeah, we can improve, and I think we will improve on our finish. And I think that we're set up for the future. I really do. I'm not declaring here and now that we're going to be favorites to win it in 2026. By no means will we be. But I think that this will be a team that will be better. This experience is going to help them. And I think that you will see improvement from this U.S. team with the players that we have. I really do think that 2026 will be a stepping stone year, or will be a year you see a massive improvement for the team.
I totally agree. I think it was some of those matches were exciting, skip class worthy, I would say, to watch some of those U.S. games. And I'd even mention the best soccer game ever, that final. I'd maybe even say up there for the best World Cup as a whole, as kind of Nate mentioned, you know, all these different games, the different upsets and other great games that took place not only in the, you know, the tournament and bracket stage, but you get the pool play as well, some of those games. Phenomenal to watch, and too bad we have to wait another 4 years for the World Cup again. That will be in Philadelphia hosting the 2026 World Cup. And with that,
you better believe that your boy's gonna be there.
Yeah, I'll be there supporting.
Jake will be there too. Jake will be on the call.
you guys are too nice. We will hope so. And definitely Nate's gonna be there. Maybe I'll go as well post-graduation. But with that, that'll do it for this episode of the Lunch Hour Sports Podcast. Once again, thank you all for listening. For future episodes of the podcast, you can keep it right here on YouTube. And again, listen on Spotify. All of our episodes are on there as well. And also, thank you, Anchor, for the continued support of the Lunch Hour Sports Podcast. Again, thank you for listening. Talk to you next time.